Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We like hanging out with you, and we appreciate, you know, spending time with you. That's for sure. Joining us now, we've got Buck Gino. Buck, welcome back, man.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Charles. I don't get to talk to you that often.
I know. The ladies are, well, they decided some things needed to be done, so it was I had to report to work today.
And, boy, it's rough having to work on Fridays, isn't it?
Well, the funny thing about that is that there's different kinds of work in radio. There is the work in front of the microphone where, you know, I get to talk to you and all kinds of other wonderful people. Mm. And then there's the paperwork that makes it happen on the backside of the microphone. It's all that stuff that just isn't, you know, the sexy, exciting.
Yeah. Well, you guys do a fine job. You should be commended for what you do. You've noticed quite a difference in the last. How long have you actually been on the air, Charles?
About 10 years.
I was going to say it's been a while. Yeah. I remember you actually interviewed with us when we were starting out on radio many years ago at WPRR. So, like I said, you and your staff should be commended.
It's the ladies that run the show. I just get to. I get to brag about them on a regular basis.
I know who runs the show.
Yeah, there you go. I make no bones about it. I have no, you know, it's the ladies that run the show. And I appreciate each and every one of them for all their fine efforts. But, Buck, I got to ask you, what's going on, man?
In Michigan, it's as far as legislation and things like that, it's kind of a, they just finished off basically giving more money to end the situation in Flint. But as far as anything else, they're getting into what we call election mode. I'm sure they're home for the holiday. So it's basically do nothing and get prepared for the election. And, it's starting to, I get, I'm getting a lot of phone calls from folks, looking for political stuff, and they're starting to become engaged, especially the elderly. They're starting to pay attention, and which is a good thing. But the one of the worst things, and I don't know, that is going on here, is that one of the first things that Snyder did and his cronies was basically gut the workers' compensation law. And, in Michigan, I don't know, we really have no enforcement of any of the laws. As a matter of fact, there's probably been a little over 400 deaths since 2004. And you'll find this interesting, but most of the families feel that they have little recourse in the court because of the rules and bringing suits over workplace deaths. The employers are pretty well protected. There was a couple of young guys basically were cleaning this is the one that really got me, that a 3,000-gallon hot unventilated tank, and they used it for fermenting molasses, and they were killed, and the total penalty for the deaths was $7,000 to the employer.
For two people. So it's $3,500 a person.
Exactly. That's what they figured that violation was worth.
Right.
And,
Buck, let's take a step back from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see politicians talk about, the 70,000-page IRS document that, it's people like you and I that have created that document to benefit ourselves. No. You know who creates those documents? The very people that write the campaign contribution checks for those politicians. That's who writes those. Okay, or their attorneys. Who is it that's out there saying, we don't need MSHA, mind safety, or OSHA, occupational health and safety? We don't need any of that safety regulation stuff. You know, we don't need unions because the government's there to protect employees on the job. And those very same people that are writing those big checks to the politicians to cut the legs out from OSHA and MSHA are the same ones that benefit from it. And they're the same ones that are saying, oh, burdensome government overreach. Let's talk about that. You know, when somebody says burdensome government overreach, it means I don't want the government holding my feet to the fire to have a safe workplace.
Exactly.
It's the same people that say, oh, well, I don't want the government coming after me because I have ripped off my employees. Those are the kinds of people that work real hard to make sure that they are not held responsible when their company breaks the law and does not provide a safe, healthful work environment for their employees. Now, what, you know, I mean, Buck, my God, not only that, but they've gone the step further to say, well, you can't hold us accountable for doing this because, you know, we did this in the name of making more money for the company.
You're exactly right, Charles. In Michigan, you know, there was, of the 322 closed cases, the median total penalty was $2,800. So that goes down to even lower than the two cases we talked about earlier. And it's really, really extremely difficult for survivors to file a civil suit because what they have to prove is they have to prove that the task that was given to the employees was likely to result in an injury or death and that the employer basically disregarded that risk. So that makes it really, really, really tough for an average family who's just lost a loved one to, you know, to fight this thing. You know, and you know, they also make it really tough for relatives to collect benefits, especially when someone is killed on the job, and if their spouse remarries, they're cut out of any benefit at all. And some families basically only get just the funeral costs. So, like I said, this has been more than a slow attack. I mean, I was reading some stuff that not only is it happening in Michigan, it's happening all across the country. So that's why it's really imperative that we, I know you talk about it every day. It's the same thing to get out there, register to vote, and become aware of these things. We can't get lost behind all this rhetoric out there and through these campaigns about what someone's going to do to bring the country back or whatever. And then once we finish that up, we really do have to hold the elected officials being progressive or Democrats to change this stuff because, you know, it's really, really become even the mistreatment of elderly people in some of these homes by some of these privatized contractors and their employees who basically make $7 to $9 an hour and really have no interest in any of the people there or take care of them. So, you know, this all goes to back to the same thing that you said. These employees or employers basically really, really, really don't have any fear of the system and what we can tell is actually a human life means really nothing.
Right. You know, this is like the old joke about, well, you know, I can fire an employee willy-nilly, and they can fight me in court, and by the time that we get done with court, you know, the long story short is the only thing I have to do is reimburse them the money that they actually would have made while working for me, and if they'd taken a job subsequent to me firing them, well, I don't have to worry about it at all. You know, this is the kind of thing where you're absolutely right. Not only do we need to, as union folks, make sure that everybody's educated on these things and picking up the phone and calling their legislators, but we need to be proactive in going out and finding these cases and highlighting them and continuing to shame these companies in public. I mean, my God, you know, Buck, in this country, there is $16 billion a year of identity theft. There are whole industries wrapped around identity theft, right?
Exactly.
But there's $19 billion in wage theft.
Oh.
And we know who's stealing.
Exactly.
We know exactly who is stealing. But nothing happens to them.
Nothing. So, and, you know, like I said, and we're just talking about the unfortunate folks that have been killed. Thousands and thousands of injuries that basically occur in the workplace that, take the ability of a worker to make a living at what they're doing away from them. And then in the end, trying to force them to take some minimum wage job so that they can kick them off any benefit that they may be getting. And so, like I said, I just, especially in Michigan, you know, I remember when they gutted the workman's comp law here. They had a hearing, and one of the industries that basically was for gutting the law was the lumber companies, because they had so many people with their, you know, how many times do you see these young folks working for a lumber company who have, you know, three fingers or
right.
less. And they were the biggest, biggest effort in this gutting the workman's comp law. So
absolutely. Hey, listen, Buck, I got to hold you there. We're up against a break.
All right.
We'll come back here in a minute. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio.
The most shocking thing about Brexit, the British people's resounding vote to pull their country out of the European Union, is that the result came as such a shock to the British establishment. After all, say the flummoxed elites, everyone who is anyone in Great Britain was opposed to exiting. The Prime Minister, leaders of the major political parties, nearly every banker and corporate chieftain, and most media barons had sternly lectured common Brits that talk of withdrawal was irresponsible fiddle-faddle that could undermine the global economic order. The more those upper crusters said no to Brexit, however, the more the masses shouted yes. The private club elites were so out of touch with the local pub commoners that they had no clue that overturning the apple cart of aloof, plutocratic globalizers is precisely what ordinary citizens were eager to do. The EU's harsh austerity policies and its poppycock promises of trickle-down benefits have been ruinous for Britain's laboring class. So, when the governing party of the moneyed interests called a national vote on staying or exiting, arrogantly assuming they would easily win, the people welcomed it as a chance to jab a thumb in the establishment's eye. And they did. Now, the entire global establishment is assuring itself that the Brexit movement is nothing but a momentary spasm of voter ignorance and lower-class bigotry against Muslim immigrants. But they're only fooling themselves. While the two-headed monster of raw racism and xenophobia was in play, at its core, this vote was a full-throated rebellion against out-of-control economic and political elites ruling from afar, enriching themselves by ransacking the workaday majority. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, some voters are bigots, and some just get bamboozled, but Brexit was mostly a democratic rebellion against the oligarchs and plutocrats. It's the same rebellion that's on the move in America, and it's just getting started.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing!
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Ruth Roosie, and this is how I live United. I read to children as part of United Way's education program. It helps them create links between language and literacy and prepares them for a better academic future. I figure I have the time and they have the need. My name is Ruth Roosie. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Union Edge Labor Stock Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We like hanging out with you. And every time I get Buck Gino on this program, it gets me all fired up and ready.
Yeah. Well, Charles, that's kind of my job.
I know. You do a great job of it, man. It's a wonderful thing, and it reminds me why we actually do this on a regular basis. But this is my goodness, these companies, they know they can get away with it because they have been very effective in weakening the laws, making OSHA and MSHA literally paper tigers.
Exactly.
And then they still complain. Oh, OSHA's coming in to do an inspection. It's so horrible. Burdensome government overreach.
And I can even remember in the days when I was working, with the tools that you'd be on a job and all of a sudden, and back in the day, before the organizing became really prevalent, oftentimes we as plumbers and pipe fitters were the only union people on the job. I mean, everything else was being done by the non-union, and you could almost tell, we always made sure our stuff was right and safe. We always had safety meetings, and we always had a complete open discussion about how we were going to take care of each other and if there was anything that was going on, and you could always tell that, when the OSHA was going to come on the job, because the folks on the non-union side were ordered by their employees to clean up their work areas, do everything, on the up and up, make sure there was no cords with the bare wires and all this stuff. And then as soon as the inspector would come, when he was gone or she was gone, they went back to what they were doing. So,
putting people in the hospital.
Exactly. And I always would argue that they should be held accountable even for the work that they do. We had a couple of employees that were working for the city of Grand Rapids years ago that were got caught down in a steam tunnel, and one of the flanges blew off and hit a young man, and it was 18 feet deep, believe it or not, and he had no mechanism of getting, his helper had no mechanism of getting him out of that hole. And to my estimation, if an employer does that, and they're they should never be allowed to bid any work for that municipality again.
Yeah.
And they should be penalized.
Right.
Exactly.
this is a whole series of, it's not my responsibility. I'm not the person who's responsible for this kind of thing, all the way down. And they have very, very carefully crafted this. My goodness, the company's not responsible for it. The employee's not responsible for it. Oftentimes the employee gets blamed. Okay.
That's what the first thing they try to do.
Yeah. The supervisor's not responsible for it. Oh, I don't know what this guy was doing when he was out there. It's not my fault. And then, it goes all the way up to the politicians in the city or the county who say, they're a private contractor. We can't control them. My God. I mean, what happens, it's one thing when the employees are hurt, but what about that poor schmo that's walking down the street underneath the crane?
Yeah.
It's
truly amazing. And like I said, it's just been one of those things that they've been kind of working on, what I call under the radar in all the states, to basically gut all these workmen's compensation laws to benefit even farther the employers. And like I said, that's why I get so upset, if you will, when I listen to this guy that's running for president talk about how he's for the blue-collar worker, all this stuff, and this guy, in some of his endeavors, his hotels and things like that he builds across the country and in other countries, is one of the worst offenders. And, it's amazing how they can hide all this stuff, or people can be oblivious to what's going on, but this is a big issue in this country. So that's why this election is probably one of the you know, as we say almost all the time, because as workers, we're fighting to change laws to make things more amenable to work and make sure we go home with 10 fingers and 10 toes to our families. That's why it's so very important that we pay attention to this.
Right. And, Buck, you know, don't listen to what the person's saying. Take a look at what they've done in the recent past.
Exactly.
You know, my goodness, you know, the Trump Casino in Las Vegas, the casino to the left and the casino to the right, their employees are making $3.25, $3.50 an hour more per hour. Okay.
Yes.
Trump is underpaying his people in Las Vegas. You know, Trump has repeatedly said American workers make too much money. We need to fix that.
Yeah.
You know, he is, you know, he's got that clothing line. He's got that suit line, the tie line. You know, that's all that he sends all that to either Malaysia or China. You know,
exactly.
His furniture line, it's over, you know, somewhere else. It's overseas. It's not here in the United States. This guy, you know, and you know, we're coming to find out that, you know, he's a chip off the old block.
Exactly.
You know, and Fred Trump was, you know, just another, well, just like his son.
Exactly. Exactly. And I believe even, I think it was in Las Vegas, that one of the hotels that he was, the workers voted to unionize.
Right.
And, boy, that got ugly in a hurry with intimidation and even physical things and, you know, his refusal to bargain a contract. So anytime that you're out there and you hear this guy talk about how he's for the worker and all this, he starts spouting off this garbage about the trade agreements is what's really hurting America. And they are. Don't get me wrong. We'd have to take another 2 hours to talk about trade agreements. But the biggest thing that hurts the workers in this country is the fact that the wages have been stagnant for 30 years.
Right. In the meantime, productivity and profits for these corporations has been steadily going through the roof.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, so don't give me this. Don't give me this that American workers have to make less money. Well, how about American corporations have to make less profits? Oh my goodness gracious sakes alive! How can you say that? You know?
You mean those job creators?
Yeah. Those one percenters. Yeah. My God. You know, and folks, again, I'm going to say this. Don't believe me just because I'm on the radio.
Exactly.
Do your own homework on this. Figure it out for yourself. I mean,
pay attention to what this guy is saying, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and for all those people that are, you know, I got to say it. These Bernie or bust people, you know what? Think about what you're doing. You think about what you're doing.
Yeah,
you know,
the only thing I say about that is that, you know, if we really want to promote and supposedly give this, if we keep fighting this and we take away all the hard work that Bernie actually did, if you want to create something good, take the best of both worlds, do the right thing when you go out and vote, and then hold the Democrats' feet to the fire to change these things like minimum wage and all these workman compensation. That way, Mr. Sanders will have a legacy. But if we keep going through this constant battle here, it will ruin all the things that he's accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, Buck, we've got about 30 seconds here. What are you going to be talking about this afternoon?
We're going to be talking about some with Tom Good, the National Labor Relations Board. We're going to be talking about some of these new decisions. The one basically from the out in Oakland, California, that basically from the SEIU fought a case that basically said that employers have to prove certain things before they can hire replacement workers. And we're going to talk about some of the other new decisions coming down from the LRB.
There you go. We appreciate that. Listen, Buck, I'm going to get going. Appreciate your time, and we will talk to you again soon. I'm Charles.
God bless you. Thank you for what you guys do.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Talk Radio.